It's my pleasure, along with the pleasure of the entire Ridgeview Alumni Steering Committee, to present tonight's speaker. He graciously accepted our invitation to come down here and help us kick off our annual Spring Fling celebration. Harry O., I have heard speak before, and I hear him share occasionally when we are in the same meetings together at a clubhouse up in Acworth. And when Harry shares, everybody else in the room will stop fidgeting or doing whatever they're doing with their phones, and they listen, because Harry always has a message of experience, strength, and hope. And a lot of times, chair people will always want to end a meeting by asking Harry to share, because that way those that have been in the meeting for the past hour can leave with a really good feeling, because Harry's always got something good to say. And so without further ado, I introduce you, Harry O.
Hello, everybody. Check. Yeah, that's working. Hey, everybody. My name is Harry. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
Hello, everybody. I'd like to first thank Sam for asking me to come down and speak. And it wasn't, he said, "You're speaking." And I said, "Okay, I'll be there." So that's the way it goes. When you get asked to do service, that's what you do. So I'll just tell you a little about myself. Thank you very much for being here. Can you hear me? Is this loud enough? Can you hear me back there? Does it need to be louder? It needs to be louder? You good? Okay. All right. I see some heads going like this. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. Yeah. Were you at The Rock that did the same thing? Somebody did at the podium. That was I hid behind the podium on the stage, and this gentleman came up and moved it. I had no choice but to, all right, I'm here. I wanted to be anonymous, really anonymous. My home group is Sober at Six at Howell Place. My sobriety date is 9/8/1975. Unfortunately, my sponsor passed away 2 years ago. His name was Bill R. He had been my sponsor for over 30 years. And he's been a tough one to try to replace. Pat W. was my other, the go-to guy. Bill was always kind of the soft guy. He was always, I'd call him up with a problem and, you know, there's something going at the meetings that I don't like, you know, because I've got time. So I call Roop. And I say, "Bill, this is what's going on over at this meeting. Can you help me out here? I want you to, you know, charge me up, give me some stuff that I can go to." And he said, Harry, he said, "Your primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic, the suffering alcoholic." And I would go, he said, then he would say, "Now let's pray." And I would go, "All right, Bill, go ahead, let's pray." Pat was the opposite. When I would call Pat, Pat had 1,000 stories, and he would go on and on and on and on and on. I don't know how many know Pat, but he was this big old berry guy from Chicago and just a sweetheart of a guy. But if you first met him, you'd scare the hell out of you because he came on to you so strong. You know, and Bill would just give me the subtle, every once in a while, he'd do something subtle, and then I'd say, "Okay, Bill, thanks a lot." And then 4 days later, I'd go, "He just told me off." I didn't know that. I just figured it out. He was telling me off. So I also sponsor people. And I think it's critical that you sponsor as well. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. First time I had a drink was at the age of 14. And I hear this is just more than an AA. I have been in some places where I thought it was only an AA talk, so I will also talk about drugs. My first drink was at the age of 14 years old. My father drank. I did not know that when I drank that I got drunk, that was the way it was. That's just simply the way it was, that everybody that drank got intoxicated and got drunk and acted crazy. My father, we lived in Yonkers, New York as a child, and my father had bars or was tending bars or managed the bars, and I was in there all the time as a kid playing shuffleboard. So I've been around that environment all my life, thinking that that's just the way it was. It's just the way things were. It was a normal way of surviving and living. And I always talked about horses. I'm not really sure what that was about. Numbers and horses. I was a little kid. I didn't see any horses in there, but I heard that something was going on at the racetrack. And so I was very like, give me number 14, okay? So after that, for some ungodly reason, we moved out of Yonkers and we moved up to the Catskills. And it was quite different in the Catskills. Living on the streets to being in a farm cottage area. It was called, I can't remember the name of it. I didn't want to name it, remember the name of it. It was out way out in the boonies, and it was all different. And like, this was like, this is crazy. There's nobody around to hang out with on the streets, and there's, so like I said, my first drink was at the age of 14. Got drunk the first time I drank. Blacked out the first time I drank. I have never had one drink in my life. I do not know what that's like, to have a drink. Didn't hang around with anybody that didn't drink like I did. If you did not drink like I did, I thought there was something a little strange with you. Just please get away from me. And I gravitated to people that were drinking. Everybody that I hung out with would drink. We finally moved into a town called Walden, New York, which is Newburgh, Walk Hill, it's in the Catskills. One streetlight town. And, I love being social with people. And I'll say this, and I grew up in that area, all of us hung out on the streets. After school, we'd go stand on the corner. So I really have a hard time with this not wanting to hang out. Because I've done that all my life. All the kids hung out. It was no monkey business. There was no violence. It was just, we were there hanging out. What else was there to do? Until we got cars. Then we hung out in the woods, hiding in the woods, smoking pot, doing acid. And I remember one time doing acid, and there's this little woods from one house to another, and we walked through the path to go to my other friend's house, and we literally got lost. Lost in this little path. I couldn't even figure out where the path was. None of us could. It was just, everything was just like, where the hell are we? You know what I mean? And I'm talking about maybe from here to that door, okay? Literally. I'm not kidding you. But the only way we got out is we seen a street light. And we followed the street light. And it was like, this is, I don't know how many people can relate to that part of taking acid. But that was, and I tell you, if I enjoyed it a little too much, I would go to school tripping in math class, and just like, what in the hell is he talking? Oh, wow, I get it. It's deeper than what 2 + 2 = 4. There's a deeper message here, Where's my pen? I don't know where my pen is. It just dropped. What the hell was that? Is that a snake? What is that? And not freak out, Don't freak out in front of the teacher. Because I also think that back in the 60s, they were high just as well. I really do. And one teacher was a guitar player, and it was easy to get him distracted because I was a musician. I would say, what kind of guitar do you play? And we'd be teaching math, and he would just take off. He started drawing on the board, and we're doing this, and I'm going, I got this guy off somewhere else. So I love getting high. I love smoking pot. I love drinking. I love doing it all. This was back in the 60s. Milo, we were just talking a little earlier. My little town, I was 13 at the time. Woodstock concert was just getting cranked up. You got to remember something. I am literally 5-8 miles from the closest street light. And it was bumper to bumper going through my town. And I never seen so many hippies in all my life. And they would call me, and they would say, well, because David Thoreau, where's the Walden Pond? Because I lived in Walden. I said, you're kind of in the wrong state, I think. But I wasn't thinking quick enough. Maybe I could make some money off of this. Yeah, Walden Pond's over here. Just give me $5. We'll go down here and let them check it out. But it was crazy. It was bumper to bumper. And so I continued to smoke and I continued to drink. And really, after a while, my deal was really the drinking. I'd love to get drunk. Love to get drunk. And my father at the time had a grocery store. And my father, our basement was just freaking loaded with booze. I mean, he had it like Schaefer beer, Beck's beer, Budweiser beer, Heineken. I mean, it was just these rows. Scotch over here, Fleischmann's over here, Bacardi rum down over there. So, I mean, it was just a free-for-all. Never missed it. You wanted to go to the movies, the drive-in movies, I'd grab a couple of six-packs of Heineken and off I'd go. He'd say, son, where are you going? We're going to the movies. Do you mind if I take a couple of bottles of the Heineken? Sure, go. Have fun. So it was very much accepted in my family. Let me say this to you. When I drink, I get drunk. I do not know what it's like to stop drinking. If I picked up a drink right now, I would get drunk. Now, if they say the progression continues, if I was blacking out the way I was, I would hate to find out where I would be with that progression. Because it's been 40 years ago. Long time not drinking. Let me say this to you. The idea that I could drink successfully had to be smashed. I cannot drink successfully, and I know that. If I pick up a drink, I'm a dead duck. I know that. I wouldn't be here, and that's the reason why I'm here tonight. Because I have to continue to carry the message. Now, my father came into the program, Alcoholics Anonymous, in 1974. And I thought the old man, this is great for the old man. He needs to sober up, you know? I was still in my teens. We were doing shows together. My father was a comic. I was a musician. I started playing bass guitar and trumpet, and I was in the band. And I was a kid. There was only 3 bass players. I probably in maybe 5 towns. So I played bass, did a lot of playing with a lot of the older guys, got in a lot of trouble with the older guys, but a lot of partying. My father comes in the program in 1974. And I thought, he needs to sober up. He's in his 30s, he's over the hill. It's time to retire. Put him out in the pasture, you know what I'm saying? Get him out there in the pasture. And I continued to drink. But I'm going to say this to you. I'm going to say this to you as parents. My father got rid of all the booze. And that was a very sad day for me. So you think your child's going, you know, my poor kids, they have it tough. I drank. No. He got rid of all the stash. And I was disappointed. You know what I mean? That was horrible for do that to his son. Because all the partying stopped. It all stopped. And I go home, and you people are there, and I'm smelling coffee and donuts. And you're laughing. And you're carrying on. And there's cops there. And there's priests there. And there's, I mean, every type of person you can think of. And I'm going, dude, you guys are weird. It was stranger before, I thought. But now it's gotten really strange. With all these people in the house. And I'd go home and he'd be barbecuing and he'd say, hey, you want to hang out? That's okay, Pop. I'll see you later. You have fun. Yeah, you knock yourself out. I'll talk to you later, okay? A year and a half later, I come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had 2 friends that were in the service. This is the tail end of the Vietnam War. They had come back, and we went out and started hitting the partying. And we drank and blacked out, and I didn't know where I was half the time with these guys. And I do remember going to this one club called the Carlos, and we were going walking in. I've been there 100 times, been there with my father. We used to go partying at this club. It was just a common thing to go there and dance and hang out and laugh and tell, you know, it was just so I go to the door with my buddies, and the guy asks me for ID. I've been there, you know, and I pull out a $20 bill. I mean, I'm drunk. I don't know what the hell's going on. He says, "You don't look like that guy in the $20 bill." You know, and of course that pissed me off. You know, and I get into it with him, and then before you know it, the cops show up, and they start dragging me off, and my two guys get in an argument with them, and they let me go and say, "Okay, we're going to take you two. Since you got, you know," and they started arguing with the cops, they let me go. And this one cop comes over to me, and I put my arm around the cop. And he looks at me. And I said, "Just do me a favor." I said, "I don't know why the guy didn't take me down." He said, "We're out partying. My guys are, you know, we'll go home. They're just back from Vietnam. You know, I did the old Vietnam thing." You know, and he looked at me, started cracking up, freaking laughing. And he turned around, he said to the other cop, he said, "Let them go." He said, we had a couple females with us, friends. And they said, the cop says, "I want you to drive them home, and I want you to leave right now." And I know those days with the cops were going to end. He was being nice, I don't know why. But he let us go. And I know there's going to be more run-ins the way my behavior was. But they let us go. Of course, we didn't go home. Went to another club. Got into another fight. Thank God those days were not we had cell phones. You know what I mean? It was a little bit tougher, I think, for us to trace us down, particularly since we knew the area. And, well, I take that back. A good friend of mine that was driving that the Camaro is now a cop in upstate New York, so I would imagine they're not getting away from him very easy. But we ended up getting another fight, and I don't know. The next day I woke up and I said, "This is it. I can't do this anymore." And that was the day that I surrendered and I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 19 years old. Went to my first AA meeting. I couldn't walk on this leg. I got in a fight with a guy in the bar, out in the bar, parking lot. Grabbed one, I slipped. I was up walking, by the way. That part of my life. So I ended up my first AA meeting, and I came home and I told my father, "This is it. I need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to go." I will say this. I got to tell you something. I watched my father change. My father was a very violent drunk. There wouldn't be times that he would come home that he would be passed out in on the lawn, and we'd have to go out and get him at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And my father, let me tell you something, when he was drinking, I would have to go downstairs. I was the oldest. I'd have to go downstairs and cook for him. And then he would take that dish and fling it up against the wall and then go into a tirade. So it was not a very nice scene. My father was not a very nice man when he was drunk. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, I could not predict what my father was going to do. Very violent. So when he comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, I see a total change in my father. Total change in my father. And I thought, there's something different here going on. So I went to my first AA meeting in St. Patterson, New Jersey. It was a podium-style meeting. And back in those days, 1975, we didn't have chips. Now I'm just going to give you a historical record. It's just the way it was. We didn't have chips. Didn't read how it works. I'm just going to tell you what it was. Serenity prayer, preamble, into the meeting ended, we did the Lord's Prayer, and that's how it went. Now, 90 meetings, 90 days, took the cut, 90 years, and you put it in your mouth. I didn't say nothing for 90 days. The only thing I said, my name was Harry, and that was it. After 90 days, I said, "My name was Harry and I'm an alcoholic." was a little bit tougher back then. And I'm glad the way it was. But I'll tell you one thing, the guys in that period, and it's the same way now, I was very, very fortunate that they would take us to meetings. I would go to Connecticut. I'll give you an example. Like Connecticut would have meetings at Hartford, and then they would bring their guys down there to our home group. And then our home group would go to them. So there was a lot of time spending time in a vehicle with a bunch of guys talking about the program. Had a lot of fun. A lot of fun. You know, the word God in the third step, I couldn't get there. I knew I was powerless over alcohol. There was no doubt in my mind that I was powerless over alcohol. My life had become unmanageable. There's no doubt. The way I was drinking, I could not stop drinking. And, you know, even today when I go in the grocery store, it's the first thing I notice. I don't know about you. I don't notice the bread, but I know exactly where those freaking bottles are, and I've been sober a long time. And I go, oh, look at that new label. No, I better not look at that new label. They would, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't go to donuts, down to donuts in the bread section and go, I wonder what new Wonder Bread they got today. You know what I mean? I mean, I know I'm an alcoholic. I smell it, I can see it, you know what I mean? It's right there, you know? So, Paterson, New Jersey, I start going to meetings. Tom Carlew, a very good friend of mine, comes in. He was the one that was in the service. He heals AWOL. He comes back, we send him to West Point. We pull up to West Point and say, all right, pal, go back in. West Point's a place, they'll take you where you need to go. Tom Carlew comes out, he's starting to go to meetings. Now, Tom Carlew, I had to watch how Tom Carlew operated, because he tried to always try to smoke the guys, the old timers that were around. You know what I mean? They just didn't take his crap. Yeah, the cops up there, you know, those cops, New York City cops, they look at Tom like, you know, they worked all day downtown doing whatever the hell they were doing down in the city. And then this kid would come up trying to bullshit him, and they were like, you know, Tom, if you keep running your mouth and you get drunk, I'm gonna punch your freaking lights out. That's what a cop said to him, and I said, I get that, I understand what he's saying very clearly. You know what I mean? It was just a whole different thing, and Tom would just like, okay. And he'd be like, try to 13-step somebody, and they'd walk right up to him. You know, he's trying to 13-step you. You know that, don't you? You know, that's what he's doing, you know. Tom, I think, was the first one in the meetings that would raise his hand. Back then, you didn't raise your hand. My father said on this side, oh, my father hated Tom Carlew. Hated Tom Carlew. Because he thought he was corrupting his son, me. Tom walks up to my father with this long hair and says, Obi, will you be my sponsor? My father was like, holy Jesus Christ, yes. You don't turn it down, right? Tom answers my father. So Tom Carlew's sitting in the meeting, and we find out, they find out that he's raising his hand. You don't raise your hand. There's no, hey, I want to share. Yeah. No. So my sponsor sits on this side, my father sits on that side, and when Tom goes raise his hand, my sponsor pulls his hand down, and my father gives him a shot. He goes, oh. Oh. Every time Tom just kept trying to get over. All right, raise my hand. Nope, down comes the hand. Here goes the shot. You know what I mean? Just to watch Tom carry on with the trip. You know what I mean? I love Tom Carlew. Tom Carlew died, passed away with 19 years of sobriety. Massive heart attack. Great guy. Stayed sober quite a few years. Let me say this to you. I did not want, because I was 19, thought I was in the same shape you people were in. I didn't think I really needed to work those 12 steps. I really didn't think that, you know, the word God, you know, I don't know about that, you know. I would listen, but, you know, I don't know, you know what I mean? I can stay sober without doing the fourth step, and, you know, I don't really need to believe in God. You know, defiant individuality describes us. Defiant individual does not brook to any man or any God. You know what I mean? I just, I don't know if I need to do this because you guys are a little bit more crazier than I am. You know, I just, you know what I mean? Until the pain got so freaking bad that I decided I needed to do something. Then I started moving. It was, for me, the 12 steps, I'm just going to tell you, the 12 steps didn't come easy. I wasn't like, oh, I think I'll do a 4-step. I know that's tough to hear, but I was a little bit more, maybe you guys jumped on it right away. I just like, I don't know, I just, you know, 4-step, I'll go ahead and do it right now. No, it took grunt conferencing, doing things my own freaking way, and I paid the price for it, and I was like, you know what, you're either going to drink, or you're going to do the 4-step. You're either going to drink, or you're going to do it. What is it going to be? And I've done many inventories. And I'll say this, if you're having a hard time, you just got to hang in there. And let me say something about time to you. Just because I've got 40 years doesn't mean that I can't get crazy as a bed bug. Just because I've got 40 years, don't think that somehow that I've kind of elevated myself above that. Mm-mm. Because I can get nuts. Very, very nuts if I pull away. If I think that I am no longer teachable, that somehow that I got this thing going on, I am screwed. And I'm sorry I use that kind of language, but I have got to stay close to this program because I can get just as crazy if I pull away and think that I am no longer teachable. No longer teachable. I have to remain teachable. I still remember what they said to me when I first came in. Stay green. If you don't, you're going to ripen, you're going to fall off. I got to continue to be teachable. I got to continue to practice the 12 steps in my life. And for me, the 12 steps is, I'll say this in the way of being a musician. As a musician, it's something that I have to continue to practice. I have to continue to practice these 12 steps, these principles, continually to practice these 12 steps, and then continually to grow. We've entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It must be continued for a lifetime. I have to continue to grow. I have to continue to reach out. And I had a lot of misconceptions about God because I grew up a Catholic, I'd go to the candy store across the street in Yonkers, rob the candy store, and then go over to the church and make my confession. So that's how much power I packed in that I was into this God, this relationship. You know what I mean? So it took me a long time. It took me a long time listening to you and watching a guy that's got his nose twisted like this and his knuckles all twisted up and look in his face, and I would say, what about that word God? And I would see something, peace. I didn't know that's what I was looking at. I knew his background. I knew he was a violent man before he came into the program. And he looked at me with this look and smile and go, hey kid, just don't take you so serious, man. It's going to be okay. Just don't drink. And we're going to take you on a 12-step call. And I was like, something totally different than I've ever seen before. And I'm glad I hung around long enough to find out what that was. Because it was the power of God that I was looking at. I was looking at this power. And I'll say something to you. Not in our international convention that was here last year, I was put on the subcommittee co-chair for the disabled. And I thought, if you think about it, if you would have told me while I was sitting in a bar in upstate New York, you're going to be in Atlanta, Georgia, you're going to be a co-chair for the International Convention in Atlanta, Georgia, for the disabled, I would say, give me another drink. Because you got something very, very seriously wrong with you. And I want to tell you something, and the reason why I'm saying this is relating to this power. Who went to the International? Anybody here? Okay. Unbelievable. Next one's going to be in Detroit. You get the opportunity, you need to go. They moving it out of Detroit? It's not going to be in Detroit? Yeah, it's going to be in Detroit. You're not going. You're not going? Okay. I was getting ready to say, did they change it on me? Where did they put it? Because I'll need to see you after the meeting to find out where it's going to be. Go. 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 80,000, 100,000 drunks from all over the world. Different. And this goes to what I'm saying about my growing up as a Catholic. Many, 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 many different spiritual walks. China. Mongolia. That's where I wanted to go drink, actually, is Mongolia. I guess very serious predictor drinkers, Mongolia. I would imagine they're pretty tough out there. All over the world. All over the world. And to be into stadium, roll into the stadium, and hear the roar of 60, 65,000 alcoholics. Unbelievable. And in the prayer, when everybody said the prayer, unbelievable. So for me, I had to get a larger scope, and I still don't totally understand this power that we are connected to, that we are involved in, because it has touched people all over the world. And that to me is a great, great blessing to know that we are being, that this power, this gift is reaching out everywhere. The Middle East, Asia, South America. I was with somebody from Venezuela, he was Spanish, okay? Latino, not Spanish. Venezuela. My mouth was drying up. I couldn't understand one word the guy was saying. Not one word, but I got what he was saying. I could feel his heart. I could feel his spirit. I could feel it. And we neither one of us could understand what the hell we were saying to each other. You know what I mean? I mean, but just incredible. Don't miss that opportunity. What I'm trying to say is there is hope. You're never alone. You think you're alone, but you're not. Let me say, I've had moments where I thought, what's going on with my life? You know what I mean? Look what we've got here in this room. I was staying at the Hilton. The first day I was there, Wednesday, down at the World Congress Center, there was a guy blowing bagpipes out in front of the World Congress Center. It was like you could hear crickets on Wednesday. Thursday, they put me on a shuttle to go to the World Congress Center. The streets, everywhere. We were everywhere. And I asked the driver, I said, have you ever seen something like this before? He said, well, we've seen this, but not at this magnitude. Not at this magnitude. And then when I pulled up to the shuttle, downstairs in the hall, there was a line for new people. I think at that point we had maybe a 55, 60 that were already pre-registered. This line was for new registration, and it went from one side of the room all the way to the hall, and I think it was a 3-4 acre hall, and there were just people. It was just absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. So if you're having a tough time, please, just hang tight. You never know who you're going to help. You never know who you're going to reach out to, it's going to be. The day will come that you will be helping somebody, that you will be of service to somebody. You're here. I'm just going to spill it out. If you don't like what I say, that's fine. But I'm just going to lay it out. I'm just going to lay it out. The day is going to come that somebody's going to walk through the door that you're going to help. But if you're not here, you're not going to find out who that is. You're not going to find out. I will not find out if I don't continue to come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have met some tremendous people. The people that were on my committees down at the International were from California. I mean, I had doctors, I had lawyers, I had carpenters, and they were, God Almighty, they could wait to help. Before we started, I had to put people at elevators and all that. And We all sat, we did the serenity prayer together. We prayed before I released everybody, and I said, look, I got an elevator that we just can't seem to get people to stop hitting the buttons, and I need somebody that can go there with authority and that can handle that elevator. Everybody got real quiet, and this guy from California, who's an attorney, said, he's an attorney. He said, I'm an attorney. Everybody looked at him and said, it's your job, go. Anyway, I had this one guy downstairs. We were getting ready to shuttle people into the Georgia Dome. And we were downstairs. They told us to go downstairs. And I had this guy had to be about 6'6". And I said, you need to stand right here. People were coming down off the elevator. These are massive elevators. They take a ride. I need somebody to stand right here. And you got to point them through that massive door so they can go into the Georgia Dome. I said, you look like you got the job. He said, I do it. So I turn around to send other people to the other area, and I look around, and he's off going over there. And I said, will you send somebody over to get him and tell him to come back? And it's this big, six foot six. He ran over here like a little child. Like a little child. And I said, this is where you need to stand. I mean, the enthusiasm, unbelievable. 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 The Spirit of God. Enthusiasm. The Spirit of God. And after we all come back out, he whispers me in my ear. He said, yeah, I pissed off a lot of people. I said, okay, that's good. Thank you. So, if you don't stay sober, you'll never experience it, my friends. If you don't stay sober, you'll never experience it. Let go. Let go. Relax. Be a part of this. Be a part of this. 1983, I stopped this helpless man on the side of the road. I just came from Rivas. Swingers meeting. Stopped out this guy, the car wouldn't start. Primed the carburetor. I said, okay, we're going to prime this carburetor. Car would not start. We get out of the car, look at it. You're a mechanic. This is back in carburetors. I said, okay, I want to give this one more shot. Gets in the car, goes to start it. I go to prime it, car blows up, catches me on fire. Now, caught me right square in the face. I knew there was a creek, didn't know much about that creek, but I thought fire, gas, water. I go towards the creek. I think I couldn't see where it was. I thought just bend over, hit my face with the water, done deal. No, it was an 8-foot drop to the water. Come down at the water, put my face out, I could hear the flames going out, but then I heard my neck crack. The next thing I know, I'm numb from here down, and I see my body coming down over top of me. I had 8 years of sobriety. I see my body coming down. No feeling, just numb, like somebody taking a hammer and hit my finger, if you know what that feels like. But I'm talking about from here down. I start losing control of this arm, left arm. I thought, no, you can't lose control of your left arm. You're in water. I got my left arm dug in so I wouldn't float, because half of me was on dirt and the rest of me was in the water. Next thing I know, I had this tremendous peace come over me. You have all experienced it if you're sitting here. Like somebody injected me with Cumberland Mall. Presence, love, a cocoon of love. The next thought I had was that I hope my family will be okay. I was 28. I could have gone right there. It would not have mattered to me one bit. At that moment, I could have gone right then, because I had no fear. It was no fear. All I felt was presence, and I felt love and peace. That was it. A thickness. Next thing I know, this guy jumps down here, and he says, what's your name? So he starts talking to me. The ambulance coming to get me, and they take me out of that freaking hole. They take me to so it used to be Smyrna Hospital. They cut my clothes off me. I was soaking wet, I was burnt. take me to Northside Hospital, put me in traction. I'm in Northside Hospital, and I'm laying in traction. Bob Fisher, I don't know, some of you guys don't know him, he's a minister, he used to come see me all the time. And let me say this to you, and if you're in an emergency room and you're in bad shape, and if they're letting people in to see you, you might want to ask the doctors what's going on, because it's a good possibility you're not going to live. You know, there's this, you might want to say, hey, you know, you're letting everybody in, talking to me, what's up there? What's going on here? Because they let everybody in to see me, because they didn't think I was going to survive it. So they lay there for a week. I won't tell you the rest of the story because I don't want to get anybody. Lay there for a week. They put me to give me surgery, and I ended up. And one of my sponsees, who's a chiropractor, coming here to visit me, and I'm in traction, and he leans on the weights, and he's pulling me this way. And he's studying chiropractor, and I said, Joe, I said, you kind of need to get your arm off of there because you're pulling my neck back. He's like, oh my God, oh my. So I ended up going, they ended up moving me to Shepherd Spinal Clinic, and I was down there for 4 months. And you people were all over me. Trust me, if it hits the fan, we're gonna be on you back. So don't tell us where you're at, because we're coming to get you. We will be there for you. I was in traction, and we're going to read the 24-hour book to you. Yeah, okay, right, like I'm going somewhere. Go ahead, good. All right, give me the daily meditation. All right, go ahead. Then we'll be down. All right, we're taking you downstairs. We're going to have a meeting. Back then, you could smoke, and everybody's freaking smoking, and my eyes were burnt from the goddamn, from the flames, and I'm crying because my eyes. Yeah, and I remember when I first came in, Harry, what do you think? Blowing that smoke at me, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, guys. they're wheeling me back upstairs. I'm crying, I'm smoking the smoke. So you never know. Life's a journey. Was it a box of candy? Was it that one saying? You just never know what's going to happen. But I'm going to say this to you, and it's fun. It's great that we all can laugh about it. You know what I mean? It's good that we can laugh about it. I'm going to wrap it up because it's 10 till. There's a lot that I wanted to say and I didn't get to say it. I said what I was supposed to say. And I'll say this to you again. You've got to hang in there. Because what you have tapped into, what we have tapped into, I'm going to speak just for Harry O'Brien. Very, very, very powerful. It'll get you through the good and it'll get you through the bad. Because it has not been all bad for me. I've had some things that I used to achieve, that I've always wanted to achieve, the plaques, the awards that I thought was going to get through this, that I got through doing this with my ears. I got the plaques. Good things have happened to me as well. It's the good things, the successful things will throw me off just as much as the bad things. You know what I mean? Do you understand what I'm saying to you? You have the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Stay close to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Do not take yourself so freaking serious. It's not that big of a deal. You're going to make it through what you're going through, because if I can, you can. Trust me, because I am a fruitcake. I am a nut. All right? Do you understand what I'm saying? Be blessed. Hang tight and laugh, for God's sakes. It's going to be okay, no matter what happens. I am here for a very, very short time. Let's face it, gang. It's been going on for a long freaking time. A lot longer. This body will be gone sooner or later. So what is going to be my choice? Am I going to make myself miserable? The deliberate manufacturing of misery? or am I going to enjoy my life? And I'm very capable of making my life miserable, making myself suffer and you suffer, people that are closest to me. So choose peace, because really that is the way to go. When I was laying in the ditch, and I'll be quiet with this, nothing else mattered to me. Not my car, not my career, not what I thought I was. That all got thrown out the window very, very, very quickly. Just like that. And I found out what was important is my relationship with this power and my relationship with you and the people that are closest to me. That's what will go. I cannot take my car with me when I go. Can't happen. And I like my car a bunch. I wish I had David's, but that's okay. So thank you very much for listening. God bless you. Face over. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Harry. Great story. If you would, give him one more round.